Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Good afternoon, and welcome everyone to Connecting Faith. This is Bill Arnold sitting in today for Joe Bender. You know, it's often Friday, roughly four times a month, and people are extra excited about it. And today is no exception. We've got a beautiful day in the upper Midwest, and that's reason enough to be in a real good mood. And we have got on the studio line today our special guest. We're going to bring her on in just a second. She's written a book along with John Crilly. Her name is Mary Schaller. She wrote a book called The Nine Arts of Spiritual Conversations. And I wonder, how are we? Are we the kind of Christians that unbelievers want to be around? How are we doing developing friendships with unbelievers? Maybe we just call it friendship or one-on-one or evangelism. Whatever we do, we've got to come up with ways for being aware of how we connect to others. And certainly in the digital media world that in which we live, we have a lot of distractions. And instead of making conversation in line at the coffee shop, we might just check our phones instead. We might just pull out the old iPad and sit around and just look at a screen instead of connecting to people. And I would guess to say, our guest is going to say, we should talk to people. People are good. And this book has been fascinating, The Nine Arts of Spiritual Conversations. I insist that we have time to go through all nine today because you're not going to want to miss any of them. My guest today is Mary Schaller, and she is a co-author of the book, The Nine Arts of Spiritual Conversations. She is on the studio line. Mary, hello.
Hello, Bill. How are you today?
Oh, you know me. I'm living the life other people just dream about.
Oh, that's a good line. Well, I'm in Chicago, and it's almost 80 degrees here, and we are living the life that we've dreamed of for months.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? You know, we often realize that we lose opportunities to continue conversations with people because we never break patterns with them. I think that's something that we should be aware of when we're having conversations. Somebody said to me the other day, how are you? And I said, well, I broke a new record today. And they said, what? What record did you break? And I said, today is the most consecutive days I've ever been alive. And all of a sudden, we had a conversation going because it wasn't, how are you? Fine, I'm fine. And then where do you go from there? And I think your book does it so beautifully, helps us make conversation with people, and that can help us eventually get on the discussion of Jesus.
Yep, that is very true. That's the whole purpose. I think that Christians have been trained in a pattern similar to you, your example of how are you. We've been trained with this sense of urgency and guilt to share the gospel out of the natural order of relationship building and conversation. And that has become bad news to some when we're trying to share the good news about Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of us don't want to have conversations with people because we don't want to be polarizing, we don't want to offend, we don't really know enough about our faith to answer a hard question they might come up with. They don't want to be pushy, they don't want to be judgmental, and they don't want to be put in a box. Comment on all that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder if it's because we first of all, don't notice what God is doing all around us. What if we started to just notice that God is working in certain, well, he's working in all of us, but, you know, he's working in certain situations where he wants us to participate. And we can start praying for that person that we're starting to interact with and ask God to show us how we can be gentle and respectful to that person. And we can listen to what they may say that God is in, that he wants us to develop a curiosity about and ask a question. Well, I've just talked about the first four of the nine arts: noticing, praying, listening, asking questions. When we start,
I know you're
with
racing
those...
way ahead of me. You're, who's the interviewer here, Mary?
Okay, sorry.
All right. Okay, now you must have a question for me. Go ahead.
Well, my question to you is this, Bill. I'm going to ask you a question. Why do you think that we jump right to wanting to share our faith rather than really having a dialogue with somebody and building relationship and trust. Why do you think we do that?
Because sharing our faith is a technique we've learned, and it's easier to apply a technique than it is to actually be vulnerable about yourself with someone else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ding, 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 ding.
Okay, ding, ding, ding. So how do we reverse that? How do we create a new pattern? Like you created a new pattern when somebody asked you how you were and you said that, you know, you had the record of how many days you've been alive. You mm-hmm. broke that pattern. How do we as Christians break the pattern of jumping in and sharing our faith maybe before it's time?
Well, I think some of it can be, do you have a real genuine interest in people? Do you have a heart for the lost? I think that's one of the questions we always need to ask ourselves. Do we love the lost enough? Because if we do, we're going to get creative with how we approach them and how we try to interact with them. And after I read chapter 3, Mary, which was The Art of Noticing, I said, no further calls. We've got a winner. I mean, that alone was one of the real highlights of the book for me.
Tell me why.
Well, because I tied it into something I said when I first came on the show, when I had all kinds of energy, and that was that we have all this digital media that's distracting us, and we've stopped noticing people. About 2 years ago, I try to have a word for the whole year that's in my head that I kind of have at the top of my brain, and that year, 2 years ago, was the word notice. I have to start noticing people and noticing things around me because that's the only way I will have opportunities.
Mm-hmm. And so why don't you think we notice?
Because we're too preoccupied with ourselves.
Mm.
Does that sound familiar?
It does, but as Christians, are we to be preoccupied with ourselves or are we to be preoccupied with God and others?
That would be the latter.
It would, and yet we as Christians have kind of been conditioned to behave like the rest of the people around us that don't know Jesus. And so these nine arts that we write about in the book are to help us to intentionally get out of the patterns and the boxes that we've put ourselves into that create anxiety when we're not doing what Jesus told us to do. If we can relax and start creating new practices that we see in Jesus, and you mentioned noticing as the one that really struck you. You know, Jesus noticed the man in the tree named Zacchaeus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could have walked right by him, but he saw him, and he invited them into a conversation. And eventually, you know, they got together to talk about God and the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we start noticing, I'll give you an example. I had a situation where I had to wire some money at a bank, and I was sitting with the banker, and I noticed that her name was spelled like the biblical Rebecca. And I said to her after we did the transaction, I said, you know, I felt this prompting of the Holy Spirit to just ask her about her name. And so I said, you know, your name is spelled like the Rebecca in the Bible. Was that how you were named? And the conversation that unfolded, Bill, was unbelievable, where this woman started to tell me how her mother named her after the Rebecca in the Bible and that she was estranged from her mother because of some bad choices that she had made. She had gotten into drugs. She had had a baby out of wedlock. And she told me all of this within 5 minutes of the getting to know her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all through that one little noticing act of seeing her name spelled like the Bible, Rebecca.
I love it. I love it. A friend of mine named Bill from Fort Worth sent me this email this morning, and he had no idea it was going to be so timely. But it was from a guy that I have as a friend, and Walt Hendrickson. And he said, Walt says, God makes you an incredible offer. You can give your life in exchange for the same thing for which Jesus spent his life, people. People last forever. For good or bad, they are eternal. Spend your life helping them prepare for eternity. Don't live. Don't give your life to mediocrity. Life is too short and the issues of eternity too significant.
Mm. Oh, that's very good.
So what you're saying through this book, The Nine Arts of Spiritual Conversations, is this feeds perfectly into what we should be spending all of our energy doing, investing in people and getting to conversations. The fact that you noticed a name on a specific spelling and you inquired, you were curious, you made her feel good about something like her name, and she was singing like a canary.
Well, she was. And what happened after that was even more interesting, because it wasn't the place to have a long conversation because she was working at the bank. And so I asked her if she would like to get together for coffee sometime and I could hear more of her story. And she said yes. And we went out to coffee the week after I had met her, and she told me more of her story. She told me more about the role that God was currently playing in her life. She felt completely guilty for her past behavior, and she was living with that guilt and the lack of relationship with her mother. And I just saw God like opening these doors for me to share the truth about Jesus in a way that she could hear and be drawn to him, rather than presenting something that she wasn't ready for at the moment that she started sharing.
Mary, there's a big difference between hearing someone and listening to them, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. There is. There is. And listening means that we are fully present, and that, many people say that listening is probably the best evangelistic tool that we have in this dry cultural climate that we live in, where no one listens to one another. And Jesus talks about in, Matthew 10:42, where when we give somebody even a cup of cold water, we will be rewarded. Mm-hmm. And listening is like a cup of cold water to many people who are not being listened to or not being valued for what's going on with them, their story. And so when we listen, we are expressing love to them in ways that they can appreciate and feel valued.
We're also saying to them, we notice you, I think, when we're listening. Listening is a lost art. I think oftentimes people just carry on parallel monologues. I'm not listening to you. I'm just waiting for you to stop talking so I can start talking.
Yes, exactly. Well, and the partner to listening is asking questions that are not canned questions, but they stem from a genuine curiosity about the person.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask the question, you want to know the answer, and that you want to have that answer be something that will allow you to dig even deeper into that particular person's story or where they're coming from. And all of a sudden, you're not thinking about an end goal of selling Jesus. You're wanting a relationship with them, and to potentially at some point introduce them to a relationship with Jesus that becomes very natural as the Father draws that person to Jesus. We know in John 6:44 that it's the Father that draws people to Jesus, not us. We get to be a part of that through our love, through our listening, through our noticing, our praying for them, and it becomes so much less stressful and so much more joy-filled than we have experienced in some of the interactions that we've been trained to have.
Yeah. All right. We're talking to Mary Schaller. She's the author of The 9 Arts of Spiritual Conversations. And maybe you have tried to bring up Jesus before, and it all of a sudden made your relationship really awkward. If you have a question or a comment and you'd like to give us a call, 1-877-933-2484. You can share your experience, and I think we've got a couple copies of Mary's book to give away. We can put you in the drawing for one of those books. You're listening to The Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in for Joe Bender. I'll be right back. Connecting Faith, Bill Arnold in today for Joe Bender, and I love being here on the beautiful University of Northwestern campus on such a gorgeous spring day. It reminds me of the old college days, isn't that right, Ted? The old college days.
Oh, yeah, the old college days.
The old college days, yeah.
I don't want to remember all the old college days, but yes.
Yeah, but, a little hurtful because I got out of high school and I got 23 rejection letters from colleges, which was kind of a bummer because I applied to 3 schools. But, it's what it is. I'm going to give it up. I'm talking to Mary Schaller today. She is the president of QPlace. She founded 3 technology-related business ventures and was the minister of small groups at Menlo Presbyterian Church in California. And she's written a book called The Nine Arts of Spiritual Conversations. And so far, we're off to a rousing start getting ready for spiritual conversations. We covered things like noticing. Are you aware of what's around you? Do you ever loiter for a little extra time to see who might show up appearing lost, confused, in need of a conversation? You know, people sometimes race out of church or they only go to the ones that they always want to talk to. What about drifting off in another direction and just looking around to see who might be looking for a conversation? Getting yourself ready by praying and saying, I want to start preparing to have a conversation with this person, and I'm going to pray for them, and then learning how to listen. Mary, I think the listening is something, again, let's go back to that because it's so important.
Well, it is, Bill, and I know that what we're seeing, we developed a spiritual conversations assessment tool where people can actually assess how well they do some of these nine arts, and that's available on our website, and there's a link at the back of the book. But on the listening, we have four lessons that we've developed in the curriculum side of things that's also available outside the book. But we talk about these in the chapter on listening. Is why should we listen? Because it expresses love. Why don't we really listen? You answered that earlier in that that we're more focused on ourselves than we are on the person that we're talking with. What is listening? It's really paying attention to what God's doing in that person's life, and how can we really listen? And the answer to that one is actually practice. I think that some of these things that we know in our head we should do, we don't really practice to get better, and therefore we don't get better. And some of the people around us, when I ask like a small group icebreaker question, who is the best listener that you know, it's really interesting to see what they say to that one. Oftentimes it's not their spouse or their parent. It's somebody that's maybe a little bit farther away in their life proximity. It could be a good friend. But what if we as spouses and sons or daughters or parents would be the person that our significant others would say is the best listener? Wouldn't that be good news?
Mm. I think part of it with people close to us is we have a hard time suspending our history with them.
Mm.
I mean, if a friend of mine comes to me and he went to the same mechanic and got ripped off five times in a row, and he came back to me and said, I took my car back there, and it looks like I'm getting ripped off. I have history with him. I want to go, you knucklehead, what are you going back to that guy for? And then he says, well, you're not listening to me. I go, well, yeah, I'm trying to straighten you out. But, I mean, sometimes we have so much history with people, it's hard to suspend our history to be a good listener. It's like when a person goes to a counselor and the counselor says, I understand. The person goes, finally, somebody gets me.
Well, that's true. And actually, we're teaching in the book some of the skills that these therapists go to school for years to get to be good listeners. But even when they have gone to school and have learned how to be a good listener, you know, most states require 3,000 hours of practice before they get to actually charge for their listening.
Mm-hmm.
So why should it be different with us that we learn some principles about listening, and you can learn them in the book, but if you don't intentionally put them into practice, people aren't going to feel that you're a good listener. And you can't just do it once out of all the times that you interact with somebody, and they're not going to notice that one time that you listen better. Maybe they will, but you've got to consistently work at it and try to get better. And it's like a musical instrument. The first time you pick up the guitar, you're not a good guitar player. You know, you might
have
read several books on that.
No, I played Stairway to Heaven the first time I picked it up.
Oh, you did? Well, I'm really impressed.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
That is a hard one to get right the first time.
I got lucky there.
So you practice, you practice, you practice, and over time, people will notice that you're better. And sometimes, you're right, the relationships that matter most to us are the hardest to change the pattern. But I've learned that when you start practicing on people that are not nearly as close to you, and you actually get positive feedback that you listened and that they noticed that you listened, then that gives you a little bit more skill to interact with the people that are closest with you. For example, my dad and I had a relationship where we couldn't talk about God because over time I had developed a lot in my faith, and my dad had some different beliefs than I did, and we had to just kind of put the whole thing on hold. We couldn't talk about God because it ended badly. And over time, knowing how to listen better with people in a small group that we call a Q place, which is 2 to 12 people that get together on a regular basis and talk about God and the Bible, and that's what our ministry does. What I learned in how to facilitate a group like that and to truly listen, I started to use that new skill of listening and asking good questions with my dad. And rather than taking a posture that I'm right and you're wrong, but instead tried to understand him and to listen and ask good questions, my dad started to open up and express his true doubts and his beliefs in a way that we could talk about them and have it not be a debate. And eventually my dad, who was not a believer, became a believer at my kitchen table one day because of that better listening skill and the ability to ask questions that allowed him to discover what he truly believed about God and the Bible and Jesus Christ.
Well, that is such a happy report that you've just given me. I love that. I mean, the distance you two traveled from being contentious to being your dad being born again is just remarkable.
Well, it is, and it happened when he was 79 years old. And after that, my dad was willing to study the Bible with me. My dad had grown up in a faith that didn't really look at the Bible much. And once he did meet Jesus, he was willing to look at the Bible for the first time. And even though we lived very far away from each other, every week we got on the phone and we again used some inductive resources that again used questions.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to talk about the Bible in a way that he started to grow in his faith. And 5 years later, he got a brain tumor and he died within like 6 months of diagnosis.
I'm so sorry.
Those 5 years of talking about the Bible and spiritual matters with my dad in a way that was positive and gentle and respectful were the best 5 years of my relationship with my father.
Oh, that's just outstanding. I love hearing that. Even a small little simple skill that I try to use is when I'm talking to someone that I don't speak until I know they've completely stopped speaking. Because I have a tendency wanting to talk over people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to carry on this conversation after the break. We need to go to a short break. I'm talking to Mary Schaller, and she's written a book called The Nine Arts of Spiritual Conversation. And I know all of us out there are walking alongside people who believe differently than we do, and we feel awkward sharing our faith. But we're going to learn through Mary's wonderful book how to be much more effective at coming alongside people and being that gentle, loving listener that notices, that listens, that prays for people, and that makes a big difference. You're listening to Connecting Faith, Bill Arnold, today in for Joe Bender. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in today for Joe Bender. We're talking to Mary Schaller today. She's written a book called The Nine Arts of Spiritual Conversations. You know, when we're walking alongside people who believe differently than we are and we're looking for ways to connect with people, there's a lot of things that can cause trouble. What if we're shy? What if we're an introvert? What about if we're just uncomfortable approaching a stranger and starting to have a conversation of any kind, and then we're going to sort of get it onto the subject of faith and God? That's all pretty dangerous, a little bit scary. Mary, talk about how introverts and people who might be a little shy can have conversations with people going forward.
They don't require any talking. They're really silent arts, and introverts love that because they can do them without needing to say a word. As you do the next three of the nine, we call these getting started, and you do have to say something. But the interesting thing about the next art in the sequence is asking questions. You are really still not doing all the talking at this point. You're basically drawing out another person. And you do that by asking questions that are open-ended, that are ones that stem from your own curiosity, that that are concise questions, not ones that you ramble on, that begin with what or why or how.
Mm-hmm.
And those kinds of questions make a person think. And when someone thinks, they're more engaged, they're more invested. You know, for example, you know, somebody in a conversation could say to you, well, you know, I don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God. And our natural response to that as believers is to defend the statement that Jesus is God.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we go into a lot of talking when another way to respond, and Jesus did this masterfully. I mean, you know, he asked, you know, more than 150 questions in the four Gospels. And he often asked a question to it when somebody asked him a question. So if somebody would make a statement like that about not believing that Jesus is the Son of God, a way to respond to that, and especially introverts might like this answer, is what if you answered with a question by saying, well, tell me how you came to that conclusion? Simple question,
mm-hmm.
very concise.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the person that made that statement has an opportunity to explain how they did come to that conclusion. And oftentimes, they've never said maybe what they really think out loud. And a lot of times it's because, you know, we as Christians have been doing all the talking in relation to that answer when we really haven't given them a chance to think through what they really believe. And sometimes when people start saying some of the things out loud that they think they believe, you don't even need to correct them at all because they start to realize that there's holes in what they think. And they may, for, you know, days afterward, think about their answer and maybe start to slowly change because they weren't put in a defensive position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sometimes ask people, tell me about the God you rejected, if you've done that. And they go, well, I'll tell you, you know, when I was 12 years old, my brother got cancer and died, and I could never trust that God again. I go, well, I understand. I would be mad, too.
Right. And so when you start to go a little deeper with somebody through a well-positioned question that's not manipulative, but out of your own curiosity and desire to understand, it makes a big difference. So, you know, the other two arts in this particular set of getting started are loving and welcoming. And loving is actually the middle art of the nine. It's the kind of the fulcrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's four arts that come before it and there's four arts that come after it.
Yeah.
And it's not quite as tangible as maybe the other eight arts, but it's what we mean by that is that art, it should be Christ's love that compels us. You know, when you think about 2 Corinthians 5:14, where Paul says that the motivation for our desire to make disciples and to help somebody see the good news about Jesus should be out of love, not out of guilt or obligation or a sense of duty, because people read right through that. And so we need to understand that we have been given such an incredible gift that has met our deepest need in Jesus, that if we can help someone else have their deepest need met, it is the greatest treasure we could give somebody. And our motivation is love. When we love somebody, and we can show love in a variety of ways, including, you know, this listening and asking questions and noticing and praying, of course. But it might be as simple as just getting, you know, somebody a drink of water when it looks like they're thirsty and they're waiting in line, or, you know, when somebody's sick in your neighborhood, of bringing them some soup or some flowers. Those things count a lot for people feeling like they matter and that they're important. And the last one of this series, you know, number six in the nine arts is welcoming. And we welcome with our homes, we welcome with our facial expressions, we welcome with our words, so that when we are receiving people in a way that makes them feel, again, like they matter, that that they are invited in to our space, or they're invited into the conversation, or they're invited into our lives, we see that this really does show love in a way that is very tangible, and that that then allows wonderful conversations to take place.
You know, Mary, it's interesting because as a kid, your parents say don't talk to strangers, so that gets that gets in your head pretty early, and all of a sudden now we get to be adults and we have to reverse all that thinking and look for opportunities to be welcoming. Even that word is a big one. I mean, how do you initiate the welcoming spirit to strangers or to people that you don't, you know, that you want to try to have conversation with without appearing invasive or disruptive? I mean, I think you just have to be creative. I will oftentimes, if I'm getting out of my car in a parking lot and I've got a ways to go up to the store and somebody's getting out at the same time, I can make a comment like, say, how do you like your car? And all of a sudden, a guy will just light up and talk about his car, and I've got my new best friend on the way to the store.
Exactly. And that took very little effort on your part.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are countless ways that we can welcome people. When I had a 50th birthday party several years ago now, people who were standing up and saying what they, you know, remember about me, or, you know, something that they say about, you know, how they appreciate you on your birthday. And my neighbors all were going back to, like, the day that I brought them a plate of cookies when they moved into the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, we've had much better memories, you know, other than the plate of cookies. And yet, because they were in a position or a posture of not feeling secure yet in the neighborhood or like they belonged, those little things are and we don't have to have we should not have an agenda when we do them that, you know, we're going to have them remember that 10 years from now, but that we do it out of genuine love and care for the other person, it makes all the difference in the world. And so when you're standing in line just to comment, you know, on somebody's outfit if it's appropriate, you know, not hitting on somebody, but, you know, you start to know what to do based on God's spirit working within you as you pray for maybe the people around you. I get frustrated at lines, for instance, and, you know, I'm really thinking about myself and how long it's going to take me and how behind it's going to make me and the rest of the things that I have to do. But what if we just started to notice all the people around us and start praying for them while we're waiting, and God will often generate a conversation as we don't even expect it, because all of a sudden our heart's in a better place, and He starts working through us.
You know, and there's so many different ways to inject language into a conversation that would suggest spirituality, that opens up doors. I mean, I've been in line before at a coffee shop where I'm getting a $5 cup of coffee, you know, with all the fancy stuff in it. And I will mention to somebody, you know, like my grandmother would never have approved of me buying this cup of coffee just because of her generation. And, and, you know, I would say, well, thank goodness my grandmother prayed for me a lot. And all of a sudden, I've got a praying grandmother now. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, they can say, oh, you know, my grandmother was a praying grandmother too, or something. And I would say, well, did you learn from her? Are you praying today yourself? And all of a sudden, you've got a conversation going.
You do, and it doesn't feel weird, does it?
No, not at all. Not at all.
they could ignore it if they don't want to talk about that. But, you know, I've used the phrase often, wow, that's a God-sized problem you've just explained.
Love it. Yeah, I just love it.
You know, that people can grab onto that God-sized adjective, or they could ignore it. And if they ignore it, you don't press it because they're not ready to have any of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do, then what opens up next may blow your socks off.
Yeah, and if you don't ever put yourself in a position to have that exchange, you're never going to know. And if you're always racing or if you're in line just looking at your phone, feeling agitated that it's taking the barista an extra 9 seconds to get your olé, maybe you've got bigger problems out there.
Well, I think some of us do. I know that I've been in that position enough, Bill, that I'm convicted often.
Oh, I know. And then we think of the people that get these empty gallon jugs and they walk 5 miles to get clean water for the day. So, you know, we got problems. All right, let's...
We do.
Yeah, let's keep it going with the arts for keeping it going. We're going to get started, and I think we'll take a little break. But I just want to set it up before we go to break, and that's going to be facilitating, serving together, and sharing. Those are the three things we're going to talk about when we come back after the break. I'm talking to Mary Schaller. She's written a book called The Nine Arts of Spiritual Conversations, and it is a doozy. You're going to want to get your hands on this one. Bill Arnold in today for Joe Bender on Connecting Faith. Be right back. To Connecting Faith. Glad you joined us today. We're talking about the nine arts of spiritual conversation. We've talked about listening a lot, and Ted, who's in studio with me right now, is, I think, one of the finer listeners that I've known and met.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, see
no.
what I mean? Get that rim shot going. That's a
right,
good
right,
one.
Right.
Yeah. But we're talking to Mary Schaller, and we're talking about the nine arts of spiritual conversations, and we're trying to talk about, we're going to talk about keeping it going. Facilitating, serving together, and sharing. And I also want to talk, Mary, about things that we should maybe avoid. So let's get going with facilitating, sharing, and serving together.
Well, thanks, Bill. What we know to be true is that when you start having spiritual conversations that are joy-filled and safe and easy on a one-time basis, there's this natural tendency for some of the people that you'll have these conversations with to want to talk more. So when you start having ongoing spiritual conversations with a handful of people, it's good to understand the principle of facilitating rather than being an expert teacher. And I'll talk about this as in the book we talk a little bit about at the beginning of the book and then in this particular chapter about a telling approach and an asking approach. The telling approach is what we're most familiar with a lot of the education that we've had in the schools and even in our churches. When we're there on Sunday hearing a message, we are learning through a telling approach by one pastor, a preacher. What we've known to be true and what we see of Jesus is that he uses an asking approach a lot, where he's often guiding people to discover what is true about God and his word. And so when we take on that posture of being a guide rather than a lecture person, we find that We guide the conversation, but we are not the experts or the knowledge givers. And for most Christians, that's really good news. In small groups in the church, there's a mixture of small group leaders that are the expert teacher types that do a lot of homework ahead of time and dispense knowledge. And then there's people that facilitate, where their job is to keep the puck and play, as a hockey term up in the Northwest, in Minnesota. You know, hockey is something in which, you know, one person doesn't hold on to the puck for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the facilitator's job is to keep the conversation going, not to try to get everybody to agree or to think the same way. And that facilitating approach is attractive to people because almost anybody can do it. If you know how to respectfully guide conversations and you've got good questions to guide the conversations, our ministry, Q Place, we have a lot of inductive materials, which inductive just means that people discover for themselves what is true about God and the Bible. And it's the questions in the context of a group that produce the conversations with these open-ended questions that allow people to grasp onto what's true by looking in Scripture. And that facilitated process creates a deeper learning because it's teaching people to think for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go on to serving together, which is the next art, some people are more tactical in the way that they discover God. They may sit in a group and they may hear a lot of the principles, or they may discover them for themselves by looking into what Scripture says through a good facilitator. And by the way, we see that facilitation works best when you've got a group that are majority non-Christians, to have three facilitators, a triad of facilitators, because that threesome, the cord of three strands that's not easily broken, as Ecclesiastes 4:12 would say, we see that it's less pressure on one facilitator, and the three facilitators can pray together separately, and they can kind of bounce back and forth off each other. But even with all that working together, we find that some people may need to really see God in action. And so if you can get a group of people that believe differently to all serve together with one common purpose, and then to talk about what they learned and how they felt and where they may see God in the process of serving others, serving together is a powerful way for people to move down a journey of knowing Jesus by the way that we serve and love others.
Mm-hmm. And then what about sharing?
Well, the final art is sharing, and it's one that what Christians are most familiar with, but oftentimes outside the context of a relationship. Sharing is still very important, but it's also important that we share in a way that people can hear what we want to share with them. We need to know how to tell our stories concisely,
mm-hmm.
Ideally in a couple minutes rather than, 15 or 20 minutes, because people aren't that curious about our stories of faith. They may want to know more, but you're better off with a short version,
mm-hmm.
so that if they want to know more, they'll ask rather than giving them a long version and them waiting to get away from you. So if you can know how to tell your story of how Jesus has made a difference in your life by who you were before you met Jesus and who you are as a result of meeting Jesus and how he's changed you, then that's a powerful tool for somebody to say, wow, well, and you look at this in the weight industry, for instance, if you want to get on a weight reduction plan, you may look at somebody that before the weight reduction plan was, X number of pounds, and after the weight reduction plan, they were, a lot less pounds.
Yeah.
And so people want to know what difference Jesus has made in your life. That's
yeah.
the question that you're answering. And they also want to know what does Jesus mean? What is the good news?
Right.
And again, to be able to say that in a couple of minutes rather than a couple of hours. And I've noticed that Christians are still working on this skill, again, because we learn primarily through, preaching on Sunday, and we don't get a chance to practice. And so I would encourage everybody that's listening today, whether you buy the book or not, to think about how you can tell your story about the difference Jesus has made in your life in a concise manner, and to tell the story of God in a way that is compelling and simple so that people can understand the basics of the gospel, that we are sinners, and that that Jesus knew Jesus died for our sins. God loves us, and that he wants to redeem us, and that we can't save ourselves, but Jesus died for our sins, and he proved that he was God by raising from the dead. And that our job is to commit to follow Jesus mm-hmm. and have him be the leader of our life. When we start to simplify the gospel in such a way that it becomes natural and easy to share, people are inclined to say, I want that, if God's, again, drawing them toward Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's I know when I have conversations with people, I sometimes, you know, want to do a diagnostic with them right up front. You know, tell me what offends you. I'm curious. And then all I do is listen. Because it's like there's something that's bugging them. There's something they're willing to talk about. And if it's something from their past or something that's, you know, their hypocritical neighbor who calls himself a Christian, who borrowed their you know, floor sander and haven't returned it yet. I mean, there's a number of things that it could be that tell me what offends you. And just listen and don't try to be defensive. I mean, for me, that digs into the diagnostic. Oh, I see. Oh, I get it. Oh, yeah, that would bug me too. All of a sudden, you're just looking for that little piece of common ground. But as we do that, things like that, what are practices we should try to avoid? I mean, what are conversation killers?
Well, first of all, when you think that you have all the answers.
Yeah, Mr. Smarty Pants. That'd be me.
People don't like that.
Okay.
They don't like to be judged. None of us do.
I got a problem with that, too. Okay. I'm 0 for 2. Go ahead.
They don't like when we talk a lot.
Okay. All right, that kind of wraps up our conversation here. No, I'm just kidding.
they seriously want us to show that we value them. And so anything that spells that we don't,
yeah.
Whether it's talking too much, not listening, not paying attention to them. You use the example about everybody's so preoccupied with their phones these days.
Mm-hmm.
I was having lunch with one of my children, adult children, the other day, and he was checking, you know, his email quite a bit. And that's a conversation killer because it's hard to compete with somebody that is not giving you their full attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would say those things. Another thing is that what people is a turnoff for them is when our lives don't match up to the gospel we claim to believe. If it's not making a difference in our lives on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
if we're not living the life that we say Jesus saved us to live, then we've got to also let Jesus change those pieces of our lives that have not been changed by Jesus. And I know that there's still parts of me that Jesus has not found yet that need to be changed. And Jesus is a gentleman, and so he's not going to change those until I give him permission to take into those areas
mm-hmm.
what still needs to be changed from a sin perspective to a holy perspective.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mary, your book, The Nine Arts of Spiritual Conversations, is a little treasure of things that we need to constantly be reminding ourselves of and strategies we can use to be better listeners and lovers for Christ. And I just so appreciate your book and you and what you do and what you're spreading and sharing with other people. That wraps up all of our time for today. We're so glad you joined us today on Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in for Joe Bender. And thank you very much, Ted and Grace, for a great show. And everyone have a great weekend.